The next speaker on our program is also an author, and he has books available in the Georgian Room at the booth that he has been manning, and for the anti-communist liaison group. And Mr. Edward Hunter is quite an expert and writer on many aspects of the current situation. Many of you will probably know him from the book called The Black Book on Red China and some of his other publications. So it gives me real satisfaction to be able to get Edward Hunter to come up here from Virginia to talk to you about some of the problems that he considers serious at the moment. Mr. Hunter.
Actually, what is taking place here today is a manifestation of the grassroots anti-communist movement that has been spreading and growing throughout the United States for a period of years now, finally reaching Boston. This movement is what created consternation in the communist ranks, leading to the manifesto, the Red Manifesto of December 1960, that outlined a drive to crush the anti-communist movement in America, and which led to consternation in American official circles in Washington. Why there should be this coincidence of feeling between official circles in Washington and the Red Hierarchy in Moscow is a curious commentary on the confused mentalities in our so-called sophisticated circles, of which Boston is really the capital. The grassroots movement is not merely a manifestation of true America. The grassroots movement is taking place behind the Iron Curtain, too. We saw evidence of it a few days ago in that scandalous event at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, when a group of Russian Baptists barged into the embassy and asked for a haven, the scandal being the fact that in 1962, American officials anywhere in the world should have turned a complete cold eye to people asking for a religious haven. There is never a reason for Americans anywhere in the world, on any side of the Iron Curtain, not to bestow at least the evidence of sympathy for people who endanger their lives so completely as these religiously persecuted peoples who are on our side behind the Iron Curtain in Soviet Russia. They, in spirit, are sitting among you here tonight. They are our comrades and our colleagues. And I believe we actually have more people who are sympathetic to communism here in the United States than are in the whole continent of China and in the land of Soviet Russia, because there they know communism, and there they recognize it is not an ideology, it's a power system. And the repulse that the American government made to this grassroots movement in Moscow was part of the psychological war, because the objective of international propaganda by the Red Bloc today around the world is to tell the peoples on the communist side of the Iron Curtain that there is no hope, that the West has lost its character, the West cannot be depended upon, will betray them at every opportunity, and to tell us on this side of the Iron Curtain that the peoples behind the Iron Curtain are supporting their government. That is the most gigantic hoax that has ever been perpetrated in war since time began. And it is succeeding thanks to the type of government we now have in the United States and to the press that dominates our field of communications in the United States. I firmly believe, from what I have seen throughout the United States and in my travels abroad, that that propaganda hoax will not succeed. Exactly as this event here, slim as the audience is, small as the exhibits are, nonetheless, out of a grassroots, out of ordinary people, for the first time in the whole United States, came a set of displays, a program in the fashion of the American country fair, in which different organizations that have to do with fighting communism, organizations without connections one with the other, exactly as participants in a country fair were able to come and put on displays. This is the first of such. And for a first, it has been an astounding success. If the United States loses its liberties, if the United States becomes a dictatorship in the manner of totalitarian regimes that have existed or do exist abroad, it will be because, for one thing, the academic cradle of American higher education, Boston, the cradle of freedom in the United States, the cradle of freedom for the world, was perverted and became a center where free speech is suppressed, where the theories of freedom on which our government was founded have been perverted and betrayed. It is Boston, the sophisticates of Boston, who are perpetrating this crime against the United States, against Boston, against the free world. I have time and again come up across evidence of this. You have colleges all about you. In the name of hearing both sides, as it is expressed so frequently, any communist is able to get onto the campus and into the academic rooms of any college or university, it seems, in the Boston area. But no anti-communist, except for a symbol once in a while, perhaps Mr. Buckley, to be able to say, look, we have anti-communists. I was stunned in New York City not long ago, half year ago or so, when I participated in the first Freedom Symposium there. Ben Gitlow was one of the speakers, and Ben Gitlow is a member of my anti-communist liaison committee. He was head of the Communist Party of the United States. He was the only communist leader who has ever faced up to Stalin, not figuratively, but actually, and defied him to his face and got away alive. Ben Gitlow is an eloquent speaker, and his knowledge of communism is from the inside. And to my horror, he told me that not once, has he been given the facilities to speak in any of the colleges or universities in the United States, in Boston, for instance, where Gus Hall, where the Wilkinsons, where anyone who can say, I am a communist, on the basis of seeing and hearing both sides, is given a platform. So long as that exists, Boston is betraying its own tradition. I'm living in Washington, D.C. now, actually in Arlington across the river, in the Washington governmental area. And there seems to be a reason why, after 30 or 40 years in capitals around the world and in nations around the world, throughout China, throughout Japan, Indonesia, Europe, part of Africa, a large part, at this specific time, I have come to Washington because it seems that the nux of this war, this international Cold War, has moved to Washington. And unless the peoples of America understand what is taking place in their national capital, unless they have the moral integrity, unless they can regain the character to insist upon America's traditions and America's honest approach to facts of life being regained, unless we can do that, we shall slip into a dictatorship in a gentle fashion, because the communists don't mind. All roads to socialism is one line, another, under coexistence, you can use any phraseology you like to explain and soften the verbiage of surrender. The only thing the communists require is that you surrender. You can decide your own terminology. I have found in Washington today that the present administration, on top of a creeping deterioration in government brought about by fake liberals and by conservatives who lack character, that we are slipping fast into a fundamental change in our government. A very fundamental change toward dictatorship. We are already partly in that system. Because the liberals, so-called, are in power. And I want to explain something about the liberals. Because I am standing here as a liberal. I was raised as a liberal. I was taught what liberal meant when I was a young man and went to school. And there is no relationship between what I was taught was liberal when I was a young man and what is called liberal today, except in the spelling of the word and its pronunciation. Every other element has been changed diametrically. And I have found today that when people who are calling themselves conservatives, when they define what they are trying to conserve, at the press interview yesterday, when they were describing what they believed, they were describing what I was taught as a young man was liberal, was the liberal principles on which America was constructed. These conservatives are seeking today to conserve the fundamental liberal principles on which the United States was founded. And the people who call themselves liberals today, who have captured that word in the way the communists have captured words such as liberation and perverted it, these liberals in Washington have a different ideology. What they are setting up there is a so-called government of the elite. And what is most important for people who regard themselves as anti-communists now, because the anti-communist movement has come of age, is that they understand, that they do their homework, that they know what the facts of life politically are. And before you can understand and deal with issues, you have to understand what's happened in the so-called liberal ranks. Because the liberal of today in Washington has an ideology. It is the third stage in America for what is liberal. We had originally the liberal program on which the United States was founded, the liberal program of Jefferson, that shied against control centralized, that supported the decency of the individual. Then you had for the past 15, 20 years, a confusion in liberal ranks created by an infiltration of two types of people. One type were those who came into the liberal ranks simply because of the prestige it gave them. They wanted to straddle all issues, to take no stand on any issue, to benefit from all sides. That is utterly a perversion of what is truly liberal. A liberal is against what is wrong, no matter whether it is on one side or the other side. He's basing his beliefs on principles. The other element that went into the liberal ranks were mostly the far left, some of the far right, but mostly the far left, who went into liberal ranks to use it as a screen behind which to attack the other side and to gain control of the liberal. And there you had no ideology but confusion. But now you have an ideology again. The Salingers, the Sylvesters, the Yarmolinskys who infest our government offices, who were not elected by you people, who were not elected by Americans, who simply were appointed, who slipped in through political manipulation and other intrigue. They have an ideology. And it is a very intriguing ideology. And we should be careful not to ignore it. We have to understand it in order to be able to fight it and expose it. It is very intriguing, especially to younger minds. I'll describe this new ideology as I had it explained to me in various manners on numerous occasions in Washington. First of all, the explanation of this new ideology, which is an ideology for a government of the elite, so you don't need the mass of the people to understand this, just a few, those who have special capacities. They begin by pointing out that these are very complex times. How they love that word complex. These are very complex times. In order to understand, for instance, in a political issue, they say, in order to vote intelligently, you have to understand electronics. You have to know about nuclear fission, how it operates. You have to be knowledgeable in scientific matters. Of course, if one asks why and probes a bit, this, the falsity of this becomes easily evident. But it sounds very good. You have to have this very special knowledge. And of course, the next step is, how can you expect the average person to have this special knowledge that is required today in scientific matters, in nuclear fission, in order to vote intelligently? Of course they can't. Obviously, you require an elite, a small group of dedicated people who are willing sacrificially to give their lives to understanding these problems, and they will decide these issues on your behalf. And then when you ask why they call themselves liberal, if they were right, well, they'd be arguing for a dictatorship. And you say, well, why don't you say you believe in a dictatorship? And they, oh no, they're liberals. They don't believe in putting you in lime pits like Hitler did with dissenters. They don't believe in shooting you in the nape of the neck as Stalin did. Instead, in the words of Senator Fulbright, they believe in your education, in your, what the communists call re-education, what is actually brainwashing. I have a book on brainwashing available in the display inside. And then one might ask, who are these great minds, this elite, these great geniuses, capable of deciding for you and to educate you? Obviously, these must be people of the stature of Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, Jefferson, this Athens-like accumulation of genius that you had in and around Boston and Massachusetts in America's early history. And who do you find they are? Chester Bowles, Stevenson, Yarmolinsky, Salinger, the Kennedys. How more inflated can a mind get? These are pinheads. And let me tell you, there is no more swelled head than a pinhead. It doesn't have much to swell. These are the people who are taking over government. And they are taking it over in a very actual way, not theoretically. It is actually being done. They have found two obstacles, and this is where you, ladies and gentlemen, come in. And not merely the persons seated in this audience, but all those whom I hope will be listening to the tape, which I am told is being made of this talk. Is there one being made?
That's my understanding.
Well, that can be terrifically effective. The people in Washington who are constituting this government of the elite have found there are two obstacles to their success of taking over power, because they believe in power. By coincidence, that is the only belief left in the communist ideology as it operates in the Moscow Peking bloc. Two main obstacles to their success. One is the American Constitution. The other is the American Congress. And so you have a specific drive, educational campaign, and manipulation taking place in Washington against the American Constitution and against the American Congress. You have from the president down, whenever the opportunity arises, in double talk or otherwise, snide remarks about the American Constitution. Fulbright elaborated on his notorious secret memorandum in a speech he later made in Stanford, California, in which he pointed out that the Constitution, according to him, is an 18th century outdated document. It stands in the way of a dictatorship taking over in the United States. They have used one procedure quite successfully so far in trying to get around the public and destroy the Constitution. That is the Supreme Court. By making it not a court of law, but a sociological court, a court of sociology. Because all law courts hitherto went on tradition, went on legal tradition, legal precedent. A lawyer had to have a legal precedent on which to operate. The role of the Supreme Court was to interpret what Congress said and what was in the Constitution by legal precedent. But beginning with this Warren Court, you have that abandoned. You have now law based upon sociological interpretation. In books of sociology written even by foreigners and not American citizens. If we wanted and needed a court of sociology, all right, let us set one up. Aside from the Supreme Court, which is supposed to be a court of law, but that is what Congress's job is supposed to be. That is Congress's function. And therefore we have the Supreme Court seeking and actually kidnapping the legislative function to such an extent that the entire high court, federal court body in a convention not too long ago protested against this usurpation of prerogatives. That is one of the actual ways in which the Constitution is being attacked while simultaneously a propaganda educational attack is taking place in your teachers' colleges where political science instructors are taught. They are taught about the not the great strengths of the Constitution, but its 18th century outdatedness. That is the creeping propaganda against the Constitution. As for Congress, every effort is being made in Washington to circumvent Congress and make it as impotent as was Hitler's parliament, as was Mussolini's, as is Khrushchev's, through legislating by the White House, through executive order, through decisions by the White House, and by a new development that I have witnessed in Washington. Never have I seen anywhere in the world so cold-blooded, so corrupt, so vicious a lobby as exists in Washington, D.C., the White House, Pentagon, State Department lobby that operates in Congress, in the Senate, in the House, and utilizes any form of blackmail, any form of corruption to force your representatives to vote against their own will. And these senators, these congressmen require your support and your pressure in order to help them save Congress from this element that you have helped put over the government of the United States, because it comes from Boston, the head. And frankly, with the apathetic lack of character that has permeated so much of the American public, if this were not the Kennedys, it would be somebody else. It is the responsibility of the people. And where you have people who do not accept their responsibility, you will have people seizing power. So I do not blame the Kennedys. They are doing exactly what any ruler will do if he sees power in his grasp, because power intoxicates. It is your job to help the Kennedys become completely constitutional executives, and not to provide them a limitless power that is dangerous for them as well as for you. This lobbying by the White House is disgraceful. Throughout the United States now, wherever you go to, you hear people who tell you of receiving phone calls. This is the White House. This is the State Department. This is the Pentagon. Pressure. And the criminality. What would be corrupt if anybody in public life did that? And it should be corrupt and criminal if anybody in the White House does it. Is the use of pressures extraneous to the issue? As chairman of anti-communist liaison before the last election, I went over the list of candidates for office and those who were incumbents, and I watched and went over their records, their voting records. And I saw something that I could not understand. A number of the senators, a number of the congressmen, their voting records made no sense. Here you had a period when there were utterly anti-communist fine voting. Then the same man would vote in an utterly ADA socialist manner. And there was this utter lack of any conformity in any principle. And I went around and I said, well, what happened? How could this be? Either he votes one way or thinks one way or he votes another. And I found out that this was a result of the White House lobbying, the State Department lobbying. The man who was voting on a foreign aid measure, he was pressured. He was contacted from the White House, not on foreign aid. He was told, if you vote against the foreign aid bill, and you are from Oklahoma, or you are from Arkansas, or Iowa, and you have a defense plant there, the defense plant will be moved to Tennessee or to some other state. If you will vote for it, we can give you another defense plant. Actual blackmail. And I was talking, I had a hour and a half chat only about 2 weeks ago with one of the members of the American Senate, one of the senators. And what we discussed was how this vicious system by the executive to seize power can be prevented for their own sake, as well as the government and the countries. And it seemed, as we discussed, that there was an obvious solution. There was a time when the weight was against labor in America. So we passed legislation that pulled the scales over, and we are now, it pulled it over too much, and we now have to restore that, but that was done. The antitrust laws were the result of a lack of responsibility by very big business enterprises, and that went to an extreme, and we are now having to pull that back. You now have a new situation which is a menace to the country. The effort by executive to seize power and the means that they are using is exerting pressure on extraneous issues. A post office, a distress area, if you vote this way or that way on a bill that may have to do with simply bonds for the United Nations. Congress can most certainly make it illegal for extraneous pressures to be exerted on Congress by any other agency of the American government. That is perfectly proper. And that is what I hope that seed, this is the first time I've mentioned that suggestion in public, that might help solve this problem. It is perfectly proper for Congress, for the White House, to urge on the aid program when there's an aid vote, but it's utterly reprehensible for Congress to say you must vote so-and-so on the aid program or a local sewer plant will not be given to you in, say, Arizona or Arkansas. That is blackmail. And blackmail is the same whether it is done by a Salinger or someone in the White House as when it is done by a Hunter or somebody sitting here. There is no difference. There has recently been reached a new stage in this effort to capture power and make a dictatorship out of the United States. And let me say, ladies and gentlemen, when I came back to the United States a few years ago, having written Brainwashing in Red China and in the process of completing Brainwashing from Pavlov to Powers, I never believed I would be addressing an American public and referring to brainwashing of American people. I remember then people I respected, great martyrs such as Alfred Kohlberg, telling me about American people being brainwashed, and I telling them, no, that word doesn't apply. I am forced to say that I have seen the situation develop in America so that brainwashing does apply to the people of America. Because brainwashing consists of two processes, as I it's fully explained, may I add, in that book, which I hope you will read, Brainwashing from Pavlov to Powers. There are two processes. One is a softening up process. And during this softening up process, exactly as in the prisoner of war camps in Korea, you don't have to mention the word communism at all. Exactly as in those prisoner of war camps, the purpose is to deprive you of your loyalties, of your standards, of your faith and your convictions, so that you become empty and easily to be filled by any other alien propaganda, because a vacuum, whether it is in the mind or anywhere else, cannot naturally persist. Then the second process of the indoctrination. And what is taking place in the United States today is a softening up of the American public. And there is where every newspaper man and every liberal, really liberal, and every newspaper man, let me stress, is personally, very personally involved. Because we have had recently the forced admission in Washington of what is called news management. News management. News management against the American people. I spent quite a time in OSS, Office of Strategic Services, in World War II. I was also a consultant. I was also connected with the Central Intelligence Agency. I have been a consultant at the Pentagon for over a year on pressures that have to do with the mind. I've been a consultant, a staff consultant for the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee over a period of time. I've been a consultant for other committees, including the House Committee on Un-American Activities. The elements, the tactics that were developed in World War II to be used against the enemy, the tactics of clandestine black psychological warfare that I utilized against the enemy in World War II, I now see being utilized by our government in Washington against the American people, by the Sylvesters, by the Salingers, by these other sophisticated pinheads who must be taken seriously because they have gained power, not through your votes, through manipulation. They are utilizing news management. And news management, what does that mean? It boils down very simply. It's telling you lies. It's slanting and twisting news. This is admitted by the government in Washington, stating that news is a weapon. That is exactly what Moscow says, exactly what Hitler says. Said. News is a weapon. Therefore, if it is suitable for power to say A to you when B is the truth, they will say A. I spent 35 years and more as a newspaper correspondent, as a newspaper editor, connected with newspapers. I have never seen a threat equal to that to the press. This is a threat that it should unite every liberal, every Democrat, every Republican, every conservative, because this is basic. When news can be falsified as policy, you have no means to know how to vote, what to vote, how to react. You become helpless. You have to learn to analyze what you read, the way the populations of Soviet Russia and other behind-the-curtain countries do. You have to learn to read between the lines. You have to learn to detect a little item. The little item, for instance, months ago in a newspaper in Miami, which told about the arrest of some Cubans because they were planning to attack a part of Red Cuba. That, to a person behind the Iron Curtain, who understood reading a news-managed newspaper would mean Mr. Kennedy is informing Mr. Khrushchev that no matter what he tells the American public, he is implementing his pledge to guarantee that Castro will remain the dictator of Cuba, and if not Castro, some other red. And if Mr. Kennedy resents this interpretation, he has only himself to blame. It is only he and his regime which has perpetrated this evil of news management in America. And there is no newspaper man who can call himself a newspaper man and not a panderer in the newspaper profession who will not fight that sort of thing. And if I have not the right to say that after 35 or more years in journalism, I ask who has the right? When the Kennedys took power, and I'm mentioning the Kennedys because they are in power, their subtle effort, their subtle propaganda and taking over started before was activated tremendously during the Eisenhower administration. because communist tactics are such, designed in such a way as not to use communists, the Communist Party, that's very secondary, but to use people who are not communists, who are anti-communists, to trap them into doing what is good for communism. When the Kennedys took power, the first thing that took place in Washington, I assume you read it in your Boston newspapers, was the downgrading of the security departments in the various government agencies. In the Department of Justice, the security department, the first thing that Kennedy did, and nobody in Washington didn't notice that, and nobody in the Communist Party didn't notice it. The security department, the department that has to do with watching to see what infiltration there may be, what effort there may be against the interests of the United States. It was downgraded and kicked out of the building, put in some out-of-the-way location where it was very awkward even to operate. And an effort was made in the State Department to virtually eliminate the security department and put it under somebody who was really against the idea of security. And that happened in other agencies as well. This is not a new development. I could continue. This is a subject that requires deep thought, deep understanding. I say to you that you have not merely the responsibility to find out about these matters and to act accordingly. I say you are crazy as a loon if you don't do that, because you are throwing away your children's futures, your own lives, your property, and your own rights. And I can't imagine any sane person doing so. No wonder they have such contempt for the American public when they can perpetrate these things that I have told you about, and people not react. You need information, get the information. Also provide support, pressure, whatever you wish to call it, to defend and strengthen the backbone of your senators and your congressmen. Don't elect a man because he can do more for you. Because that more means bribery, the same as it is when a telephone call is picked up, is made to a businessman in some state, and he's told, you go and support Fulbright, and in your district such and such a contract will be given you. In your manner, you are perpetrating the same corruption. And basically, this is a matter of character. And that is why I am so optimistic, because I see not only here but through the United States people such as those who started this extraordinary affair here today taking things into their own hands and succeeding in doing what the sophisticates say could not be done, in spite of smears and pickets and every other sort of vicious, illiberal, intolerant antagonism. This is happening throughout the United States. You can regain America's rights. You can restore the rights to the whole free world and to the countries which have lost these rights, because they are all tied together. They are weak. We are strong. Very little you've seen can achieve a lot. I'm going to close with one little anecdote, a personal thing that took place yesterday. I arrived here yesterday, and I looked about, and I asked a little bit about what's taking place, and I was told about floors, lobbies, rooms, all taken in the hotel. And I said, well, who's doing a family called the McKinneys? Am I pronouncing that right? And I have an old friend, perhaps my oldest friend in America, is a family, Charles A. Haney, their fundraisers, who live in Newtonville. He had a lovely career because he's been doing nothing but financing, providing the wherewithal through campaigns for hospitals and medical schools, and to be able, as he is, to go through the United States and point town after town to a medical school that's there because of him, or a hospital. Must give him a glorious feeling. I called up Mrs. Haney. He was out. Aldous Haney. And I said, tell me, what about the McKinneys? Tell me about them. She should know all these families here. She's a Barrett. Her grandfather was the captain at Concord and so forth. And she's the McKinneys. I don't know them. I said, 1 minute, they must be multimillionaires. I said, they're taking floors in the hotel, rooms, complete reservations. How is it that you live in Newtonville and Dedham is not too far away and you don't know a multimillionaire family? And she was very confused. And you can imagine how I felt last night when I listened to as eloquent a talk as I've ever heard in my life, and as inspiring, given by that little lady, Mrs. McKinney. And because there are these ladies, and because there are people like Colonel Bunker, Colonel Bunker, I am horrible on names, we have this grassroots movement, and the grassroots movement is going to win. Thank you.